Our final presenter is Joan Brager Monsoor, and she has had over 25 years of experience in developing managers to lead in the public and private sectors around the world. Her clients have included the Ministries of Health in Egypt, Afghanistan, Kenya, and Tanzania, Otis Elevator International, Mellon Financial Corporation, and LG Group from Korea. She served as Leadership Development Specialist for the USAID Project, Leadership, Management, and Sustainability Program of Management Sciences for Health from 2000 to 2007. She took the best leadership development practices from the private sector and applied them to work with frontline healthcare managers in the developing world. She is an author of Managers Who Lead, a handbook for improving health services. She holds a doctorate in education from Harvard University. Her research is on the leadership practices of high-performing managers. Please welcome Joan.
Thank you. I debated this PowerPoint presentation. I know it's a standard for APHA, but if you'll bear with me while I don't do it for a few minutes, is that all right with you? No? Just for a few minutes. I promise I'll put a slide up if I get really bored. I really will. This is my husband, Morris Monsoor. He's a surgeon who changed his practice from surgery to management because he knew the health problems for his clinic, and then to teaching leadership. But now I'm going to ask for your help with something. Your husband, you know what? challenge feedback and support. It's the same development model of developing children. You give people a difficult challenge, which all of your projects do give people a challenge, but it's really important not just to give them a challenge, but to give them feedback and support. Otherwise, you're just throwing them off a cliff. So you give them an exact challenge and exact feedback and support. The fourth principle is really important, and research on this documented. You cannot learn to lead in 5 days. We're really sorry about that. But it's actually over time. And so it's over time, difficulties, adversity, all of this. This is how you learn how to lead. So we try to model our programs based on how people really learn, which is you put them in a real situation, like all of these programs do, and over time, with feedback from colleagues, they learn how to lead. You know, you can't put anyone through any 3-day workshop and get more than awareness. Okay? So we actually design our programs 2 days and a month in between where they practice, 2 days, a month in between. And we like to have them a minimum of 4 months, because then we can produce a health result, a measurable health result. Okay? So it is over time, and it's best within a management system. And we're passing out now is we have a framework. This is an 8-part framework. Okay? This framework was originally validated in the business world when they looked at people. The definition that we're using of leading is like a practice model. Okay? How do you enable other people? You know, leadership's not about you. It's not about you looking better, getting better, or anything. Leadership's about, you want to study someone's a good leader, you know you need to study the people around them. Study the condition of the people around them. So it's enabling others to face challenges and achieve results in complex settings. That's the definition. Enabling the others. Make sure you have a team of 15 people, they can face challenges. Right? So then we take these 8 leadership practices. We have 8 leadership and 4 leading and 4 managing practices. And we teach you very practically how do you scan your environment? How do you focus on your priorities? How do you align and mobilize people? And how do you inspire? Those are the 4 leading. And the 4 on the right, managing USA, has taught for 30 years. How do you plan, organize, implement, monitor, and evaluate? We often ask people to just framework it yourself, assessment. We say, what are you good at? How do you eat that? And often when you work in ministries and health in the developing world, they're really good at planning. Does anybody know who works in international health? Why they're really good at planning? Come on, certain things. Why are they really good at planning?
Learned.
What? Learned. The donors demand it.
They would look to get that money.
Giving them a plan. Many of the very smart. They say, well, we submit the plan 1 year, and the next year comes around, we submit the same plan. So people got
to
they modify it a little bit. Well, they know, they're in the ministry, they know how this works. So you need to both lead and manage to produce results. We know that. Okay? I never know what you're up to. What are you up to?
Yeah, for one, it was everybody.
in Uganda, at Makerere University, at Mubili, and at Embarara. Now, we've been very lucky in Uganda because they were already doing a community-based problem-solving curriculum, where they sent students out to the community to study what's happening. And, so what we did was we added these two models into their curriculum, the challenge model and the eight practices. And over several years, they scan the environment and they align and mobilize their stakeholders and achieve a result. The one piece I'd like to add about working in medical school curriculum, I don't know if it's true about public health, but we have a nice quote from our champion in Uganda, the associate dean, Dr. Sam Lubova. He says, changing a medical school curriculum is like moving a cemetery, because you get no support from the participants. Right? But so, really, let me tell you, the world is scattered with donor projects trying to change other people's curriculums. Really. And so, to go in and to get advocates internally who can say, we think leadership is an important part of the curriculum in medicine and nursing and public health, is a several-year process, which requires an internal champion. We've had internal champions who were deans, and then the dean moved and we lost the program. So it's very, very hard to change curriculum. But we do believe it's an essential part of public health that all levels lead and manage. It has to start as pre-service. I have spoken to this presentation as people who were trained as clinical surgeons, and the next week after they hit the field, they were given in charge of the entire district, and all the human resources and logistics and finance, and they had no background in that at all. But there's an assumption, especially in global public, it's a terrible assumption, that doctors will manage and lead. You find this in America, too. But just by virtue of being doctors, they know how to lead. God love them, they know a lot of things, but leadership and management takes a little bit of development. So, let me think about what did you want to add in?
Yeah, I would like just to add something about how to make the leadership and the management approach or the model that you would integrate in the practice of medicine, you know, near to the way they think as doctors, you know, and how they practice as practitioners. And the good thing that the leadership development program is designed to match this mentality. So when the students in the pilot experience this leadership development program, they said, this is what we want to diagnose our community. We need to scan. So it matches the way they do their program. And when we integrate, the leadership will not find any problem because it is matching the systems that they learn in. So they scan to learn and to diagnose the challenges of the community, and they start to work together to focus on what the priorities and, you know, sit together with the SOCT team to build their vision of what we want to see in this community and start to plan together and put this vision in action using these simple tools to move them towards what they want to achieve. And we always put this in a short-term scale, so what you can do in 1 quarter. What is the small thing you can move forward in 1 quarter? And just by moving these things, you get to start to think more challenges and, you know, more ambitious, you know, challenges. So this is the way that we found it works in this, you know, context, to match their way of thinking, to match even if they have to learn something in their class or in the workshop, but they have to go apply by facing a real challenge and apply these practices to make them move as a team from vision to action and to results.
And one of our challenges is changing the professor's mindset about what learning is. Because the professors have learned to be, as we talk about, comfortable lecturers. And when we take that ability to let them say, no, please, this is practice-based education. People are going to apply something, and you're going to be there coaching and mentoring them. It's a radical shift for professors who already assumed competency doing things the way they do them, and now they're in the developmental mode.
Yeah, it's more than, you know, than just giving lectures or making PowerPoint presentations to give them the knowledges or the competencies that you want to communicate to them. Learning together through an experiential learning model, and mostly our challenge is about, you know, decrease the amount of talking that the facilitators have to do. We just have to put them in groups, give them the right questions, enable them to discuss and reflect. And they really get engaged, and they really get the idea of what we want to tell them through their experience. Evidence is by their experience. So we wanted them to know about leaders, to ask them about a leader in their life, leader that would enable them personally to face a challenge and make a difference. And they learn together from their own experience in a way that makes them really completely engaged and not good, especially when you are in a medical or public health school and you are talking about leadership and management. You need to minimize the lectures and you need to make them learn together. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jean, Joan and Morrissey. Appreciate you tag teaming to do this. We have some time for questions, and feel free to raise your hand and identify yourself and direct any questions to any one of our panelists. Yes?
I would say just recently, in this last year, we've had more call for recording of sessions, and for various reasons. And so we do it, and it's real easy.
Even using the phone lines as your means of communication.
Yes, and so that's not a problem. Pretty simple. In terms of coordination regarding time zones, we've got a span of about 13 hours differences in time zones across. One of the cohorts, actually. And so far, everybody's been very cooperative about what that means for them personally. The first year that we had the international students added, that meant we had Rachel in Honolulu, and we had somebody in Lebanon, somebody in France, and somebody in Africa. And, you know, they were... Africa, Lebanon, and France were, you know, getting up in the middle of the night, and you know they were connecting at 2 o'clock in the morning, and it was 2 o'clock in the afternoon in Honolulu, and they didn't mind. They said they were totally okay with doing that. Now we have this year skewed the hours a bit. Now we are connecting. We used to connect from 7 to 10 p.m. East Coast time. Now we're connecting. One cohort is connecting from 4 to 7 p.m. East Coast time. The other cohort is connecting from 5 to 8 p.m. East Coast time, and it was just something that everybody collectively agreed to, and very cooperative. Nobody seems to mind any of these. You know, these tend to be minor issues.
Yes.
I have a question for Joan and Marcy. Have you had
Any other questions? Yes. Any other questions? Well, feel free to come up after the session and talk individually with the speakers, too. Thank you. I'm just going to kind of get through here to the end here. Thanks, Rebecca. I enjoyed your presentation.